Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the possibility that President Obama might nominate Larry Summers to succeed Ben Bernanke as chairman of the Federal Reserve. William Grider, the national affairs correspondent for The Nation and author of Secrets of the Temple, How the Federal Reserve Runs the Country, joins us to discuss what is an alarming prospect for many progressives who see Larry Summers, the architect of the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act, as a champion of Wall Street and a menace to Main Street. Then we will speak with the former commander of the infamous Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq, Brigadier General Janis Karpinski, about the brazen jailbreak in which 500 prisoners, including senior al-Qaeda leaders, escaped from the notorious prison during a special communal Ramadan feast under a hail of mortar fire and car bomb explosions. We will discuss how little progress has been made in Iraq since it was liberated by George W. Bush, as the sectarian divide becomes more intense under al-Maliki's Shia-led government, who are filling the jails with Sunni prisoners. Then finally, we'll go to England to celebrate the royal birth of an 8-pound, 6-ounce boy with Francis Ween, the deputy editor of the satirical magazine Private Eye. We'll discuss the royal baby fever that has gripped both the UK and the United States, where the press is brimming with breathless, sycophantic gushing at the arrival of the third in line to the British throne, in spite of the fact that the United States of America was founded and forged by a revolution against that same throne and royal family. And joining us now is William Grider, who is the national affairs correspondent for The Nation and the author of the national bestsellers One World, Ready or Not, Who Will Tell the People, and Secrets of the Temple, How the Federal Reserve Runs the Country. A reporter for 40 years, he has written for The Washington Post and Rolling Stone and has been an on-air correspondent for 6 frontline documentaries on PBS. His latest book is Come Home, America, The Rise and Fall and Redeeming Promise of Our Country. And his latest blog post at The Nation is Stop Larry Summers Before He Messes Up Again. Welcome to Background Briefing, William Grider.
Thanks. Good to be back.
So tell me it's not true. What is the basis of this rumor that Obama is going to appoint or nominates Summer to be the next head of the Federal Reserve to replace Ben Bernanke?
Yeah, well, the first time I heard it, I groaned and sort of, oh, don't, please. That can't be. And I told a few friends I told, including my wife, and she smacked her forehead like, no, don't tell me that. And I agree that it sounds unbelievable, but I it's been on the sort of casual grapevine that the 3 candidates were Geithner, Summers, and your own Californian Janet Yellen, who is vice chair of the Federal Reserve Board and a very capable person.
That was last time around.
I got a call from a good source over the weekend who said this is real. Take it seriously because they're trying. They, being the White House insiders, are trying to get Obama to announce it right now to try to take the edge off of any opposition from developing. I don't think if that's what they try, I don't think they will succeed. But nevertheless, he is absolutely convinced. Now, I didn't probe deeply into who told him this, but he's an old friend and responsible player, and I believe him when he says that.
But surely it's likely to have the reverse effect. It felt to me like the White House leaked it, or somebody in the White House leaked it, in order to create a firestorm and a pushback.
Oh, I think that's true. And it may, the source that called me may well be part of that effort. No, Washington is you can't overestimate its opacity to the public's view of things. And this is coming from people who are influential Clintonistas in the Obama White House, and many of these people who get appointed to one thing or another were literally acolytes when they were younger to Robert Rubin, Citigroup, Goldman Sachs fame. So I see this as improbable as it sounds. I see it as the old order of the Democratic Party, Clinton's New Democrats, who took power 20 years ago. When he was elected president, I see them as desperately trying to stay on top. And they can help, that will help them to do that if they have the Federal Reserve chairman, a person of a kindred spirit like Larry Summers. I've been writing recently, and people think I may be ahead of reality, and I may be, I sense we're on the brink of a new reform season, and I've been writing that in The Nation because they're not one big thing, but lots of little things tell me that, ironically, Obama is lame duck now, and therefore, and he won a second term, which is great, and everybody celebrates that, but now he's eclipsed by events, and nobody's going to wait for him to say it's okay to come out for restoring Glass-Steagall Act or whacking the banks for their various crimes, which have gone unpunished so far. So something is happening that I think has enormous political importance.
Well, of course, the repealing or putting back Glass-Steagall that was repealed by Summers, who was Treasury Secretary under Clinton, he was the biggest protagonist in getting rid of Glass-Steagall. The people who are pushing that, of course, are in the Senate, Maria Cantwell, Elizabeth Warren, and the former candidate for president, John McCain. They seem to be carrying the water on that one.
Right.
Obama is supposed to make a big speech on the economy this coming Wednesday. Do you think that it'll be about reform?
I think he's trying to revive his credentials, which are quite tarnished now, at least in among people who follow these issues. And, I mean, I'm always open to surprise, but my guess is he will repeat a lot of the things he's been saying for not just since his reelection, but for several years. We have to do something about infrastructure. We have to do something about education, so forth and so on. I don't want to belittle his positions, but he was boxed in at the start, well, really for this entire presidency. But when the Republicans got the House in 2010, that definitely wounded his capacity as president. I mean, everybody knows that, and that's not his fault. That's a really reactionary Republicans who should be despised by average Americans for that, you know, countering force. Nevertheless, there was a great deal Obama could have done with or without the Republicans supporting it, and that was in the area of banking and bank regulation, legislation that did pass in the Congress, and his appointments, with almost no exceptions, one or two, were all drawn from the Clinton crowd, literally, and the people who were in government during his presidency, but who are also the inheritors when Obama got elected, and they have a very different view of what the government should be doing about the financial system than people like me, but others who are, you know, way more aggressive than I am on these issues. I know the issues, and I'm eager to sound a warning that if they put Summers in there, that's a really soul-deadening turn in the possibilities that are before us. So, and, you know, if you made me bet in the dark of night, I would bet this won't happen because the blowback from people who really dislike and despise and fear Larry Summers' intellectual directions. But nevertheless, they're talking about it in a serious way.
I imagine, William Grider, that historians will look back on that pivotal moment when Obama became president after the crash of 2008, and essentially the economy was in free fall, and the really critical decisions were made by Obama and the team that he put together, led by Summers at the time. And it's really shaped not just his presidency, but it's shaped the economic trajectory of this country. And recently, Elizabeth Warren pointed out that the banks are now, I think, one-third bigger and stronger, and there's fewer of them. They're supposed to be too big to fail. They're too bigger to fail now. And that really, the questions now that arise is, what would have happened had we let these reckless bettors eat their bad bets and go under and revive Main Street instead of Wall Street? Because the price we paid to revive Wall Street, we're going to be paying that off forever. And it's a direct cause of why Main Street America is languishing.
Yeah. And people do remember that. They may not remember all the details as it unfolded, but you know, they do have a sense that they were not attended to, and in fact, in some ways, they were left in the water to swim for themselves. And we know what happened to millions of them. They lost everything and so forth. I think that we don't know what was really said inside the Obama White House or Treasury in those first formative months. But I think where people like Summers, and he wasn't alone, Tim Geithner, who came right out of that Wall Street culture where he had been president of the New York Federal Reserve, were all saying pretty much the same thing to the president, which is, well, this is bad, but it's not terminal. We need to do some stimulus, and we need to do this and that, but let's not overdo it, because after all, if we make life hard for these big banks, the mega banks, that will damage the possibility of recovery. And he didn't say it quite that bluntly, but the president accepted that analysis and has adhered to it, frankly, ever since. Rather quickly, way too quickly, he started congratulating his administration on having first gotten a recovery, which came in about, a year, plus, and secondly, in reforming the system so that too big to fail would not happen again. And my sense of Washington Democrats, and I'm talking about senators and Democratic representatives, is many of them, maybe most of them, knew perfectly well that this wasn't true, that the recovery was at best limp and stagnant, and that the reform bill, the Dodd-Frank bill, really didn't do what Obama said it did. You know, you can't prove that negative, but he kept on claiming victory when you know, reasonable people and smart people in Wall Street all knew it wasn't so. So what I'm getting at, he had lots of opportunities in that first 4 years to back up and say, wait a minute, I thought these things were getting better, but I could see they're not, and here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to step up. If the Republicans want to block me, so be it, but I'm going to fight for a bigger program and more stimulus, et cetera, and I'm going to enlist the Federal Reserve as a partner in this. And I think that would have been actually a very popular response, and it also would have been good economics. So I want to make it clear, I'm not beating up on Obama because, you know, he didn't fulfill all of my hopes. The conduct of the economy and his presidency is the big black hole that he has not filled. And now maybe the speech he's going to make this week will alter that, but... And I hope so, but I'll remain skeptical till I see what he does. This is not a rhetorical matter anymore.
Well, William Grider, the key to the bad advice or the unanimous advice that Obama got in those early days of when the economy was in freefall entirely came from the Wall Street crowd. And the one person that Larry Summers managed to shut out of Obama's counsel was Paul Volcker, the former head of the Federal Reserve, who apparently Obama really liked. And that's apparently Summers' great skill as an insider, as a bureaucratic infighter. He has some of that skill that Rumsfeld and Cheney had, you know. That's my understanding. And
well, and it's more than that. I mean, people like Joe Stiglitz, who's a Nobel economist and who had been in government, during the Clinton years, he was at the World Bank as an economist there. And he's not a radical, but he was a very forward-looking in his sense of the global economy and what ought to happen. He got elbowed out by Summers and Geithner even before the first election where Obama was elected. And I don't know all of the inner details of that story, but it's well-known in Washington. They had their elbows up, and they used them rather freely to make sure that nobody got in the upper ranks of the Obama administration that wasn't a legacy of Bill Clinton and Robert Rubin. And I the only one I can think of is an economist named Jared Bernstein, who was a liberal, a genuine liberal in the good old-fashioned sense of the word. And he was at the Economic Policy Institute and an advocate for labor policies and a lot of other things. He got appointed to the staff of Vice President Joe Biden, and was told that you're in charge of the administration's program for the middle class. I'm not making this up. And he didn't turn the job down. I don't think he should have turned it down. But But he, you know, it was an impossible position. And after a year or two, he didn't dump on anybody, but he just said, I've had enough. I'm getting out of here. And then there was nobody in the administration who one would could reasonably say, well, that's the labor liberal view. So,
well, but there's no way that Wall Street and Main Street are compatible. They're almost mutually exclusive. I don't know whether you saw the Sunday lead article in the New York Times about how Goldman Sachs is buying up all the aluminum ingots and trucking them around the country in a shell game. And apparently J.P. Morgan Chase does the same thing with oil tankers. They're buying up all these big...
It is a scandal. It's an outrage.
Right, but what the public don't understand is that every time they buy food and go to the gas pump, when these arbitrary raises in gas like this happening now, this has nothing to do with market forces. This is those guys on Wall Street playing games that they profit from immensely at the expense of the middle class. That's why I say Wall Street and Main Street, they're mutually exclusive.
Absolutely, and I will add a layer to that. If you recall the history of the Federal Reserve, it was allegedly an arbiter of finance and banking and access to credit and basically money stuff, but it was not to play in the real economy of production and corporations, etc. Look at the facts of what's been revealed, and it's not just the New York Times, but others scholars are laying out the same reality. These mega banks have become commercial companies. They're banks, yes, but they're also, as much a business corporation as General Motors or anybody or your company down the street. That's wrong. First of all, it violates the principle of what the Fed is supposed to do. And I don't know exactly how that unfolded, but it reminds me of the Enron scandals, you recall, from a decade ago. And it's a very similar story. So Sherrod Brown, senator from Ohio, who's got a subcommittee now on the Senate Banking Committee and is being very active and aggressive since the election in making it clear he is going to fight on some of these issues. He's quickly scheduled a hearing for tomorrow in Washington to begin pounding on this situation. And that's meaningful. You know, he's one senator and so forth and so on. I think what's happened since the election, and I think probably the people in the White House are belatedly realizing it, is Democrats who have a progressive and a fix on the economy and who feel disappointed, if not bitter, about what Obama failed to do, are not going to ask Obama for permission to go forward now with stronger ideas. They're going to just do it. And if Obama wants to get aboard, that's good. But if he doesn't, they're going to push it anyway. Because this is really, as I've suggested, this is partly about the future of the Democratic Party. And that's why those Wall Street people, like Rubin and et al., really want to get their guy in the Fed. They don't want the Democratic Party to rediscover its roots and what it used to believe.
And that would that be Janet Yellen, the vice chair of the Fed?
Yellen is clearly the leading candidate, at least in the public discussion. And I don't know her. I've never interviewed her. I've read her, economic papers and speeches for a number of years. She was president of the San Francisco Federal Reserve Bank. She served a term or two before on the Board of Governors before Obama appointed her as vice chair. People I've asked describe her as moderately liberal, with an emphasis on the liberal, or with emphasis on moderate. I mean, she's not a revolutionary or anything. She's very orthodox, but she's also very experienced and more relevant in the present situation. She has been a very active advocate for a stronger focus on jobs, unemployment, the real economy, the stuff we're talking about. And she has been a close ally of Bernanke in trying to keep that stimulus going when others were telling him to shut it down, everything's okay, let it go. Now, as I've been writing in The Nation for a couple of years, actually, I've been sort of gently urging them to do more and to take some big steps that are beyond the conventional responses. They pump all this money out for the banking system, and we all know that that has made the banks feel good about life, hasn't done much of anything for the real economy or for unemployment. I think they should go way beyond that and use the Federal Reserve, use their power for directed lending to sectors like small business.
And the student loans too, by the way,
at the same
price that they get their money for, which is less than 1%. You know, why don't the students get the money?
Throw in the mortgages. Sure. They could deal very directly with mortgage debt and both encourage and finance the restructuring, which is an opaque way of saying they've got to reduce the principal on those failing mortgages. So I don't know. I've tried to do some reporting on this and not succeeded. I don't know exactly where Janet Yellen was on those questions, but I do know that she was at least as aggressive as Bernanke, and maybe more so. But people who do know her well speak very highly of her good intentions. And so, what are the choices? Geithner put himself out of the race, my guess is he really did want to be Fed chairman as the sort of cap off his career, but he realized you ain't going to get confirmed nominate you. So he walked off the field, I guess just quite recently, let everybody know, forget it, I'm not interested. And that leaves Larry. Ian, you have a memory, which I admire. I wrote a blog once. I looked back in my website two years ago, about Summers called Professor Pants on Fire. And I just went over the top, just really lacerating the guy. And the reason I did it is because I've known him, not well or not intimately, but I've known him. I've dealt with him over many years. And the guy is just shameless in his refusal to tell the truth about things. And believe me, I'm not naive about people in Washington fudging on the truth. I know that's a part of the environment, but he really makes me mad sometimes. And I think here's another thought that follows out of that. My source who tipped me to this thing and basically urged me to say make some noise suggested that the establishment, that is including the Wall Street types and financiers of one kind or another, and political leaders, ought to realize that the Federal Reserve is in deep disrepute with the public. People learned a lot about the Fed in the last 5 years, and it shocked them, and they asked, as they should, how come you're doing all that for the banks and you're not doing anything for us, and so forth and so on. But the Fed's in a hole, and nobody went to jail. Nobody really came to account with what these guys had done. My question, the question my friend asks is, did these guys think that Larry Summers is going to cure that problem for them? I mean, it's ridiculous to even suggest it because whatever you know about Larry Summers, he is a very uncomfortable personality. His arrogance is not a secret.
Well, just in closing, William Grider, if the choice is between Summers and Janet Yellen, it couldn't be more night and day. Summers, of course, has a very unpleasant history of treating women, and Bernanke is a gentle kind of guy, very collegial, and Summers is a bully.
Exactly, that's the word I should have used in my piece. Bully. He is an intellectual bully, political bully.
So I guess the word to get out for the American people and those, particularly the progressive activists, is get behind Janet Yellen and shut down this horrible thought of the country's the second most powerful person in the world. Is that the phrase that's used to describe the chairman of the Fed?
Yeah. Right, and I think that's right the way you've described it, I'm not promoting her candidacy, but what I've heard about Yellen over many years is that, hey, she's from Berkeley and San Francisco, and she ran the San Francisco Fed in a very progressive fashion, and she's had to deal for really the last 20 years in an environment that is hostile to her type. Just, the old boys from the East Coast, among others. So that's a basis for saying as Fed chairman, she would have the first opportunity, really, to spread her cards out on the table and say, look, here's where we are, and this is serious, it's still serious, we've got to do more, etc. And then we'll find out what she really believes. What I'm saying is, I appreciate the fact that she was not in a position as a governor or even as president of the San Francisco Fed to just, you know, lay it all out and take aggressive, even radical positions. That would have killed her. It would have killed her influence anyway. So now we have a chance to see, and I'm pretty hopeful that this is not, you know, I've read her speeches, particularly in the last couple of years, and that's what she's saying. Now, she says it more gently than I do, but you know, central bankers always do say it more gently.
Well, William Grider, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you, Ian.
I appreciate it. Again, I've been speaking with William Grider, who's a national affairs correspondent for The Nation and the author of the national bestsellers One World, Ready or Not, Who Will Tell the People, and Secrets of the Temple, How the Federal Reserve Runs the Country. A reporter for 40 years, he's written for The Washington Post and Rolling Stone and has been an on-air correspondent for 6 Frontline documentaries on PBS. His latest book is Come Home, America, The Rise and Fall and Redeeming Promise of Our Country. And his latest blog post at The Nation is Stop Larry Summers Before He Messes Up Again. And we're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with a former brigadier general who's in charge of the infamous Abu Ghraib prison, from which there was a massive jailbreak just yesterday.
The peddlers and the meddlers, they buy and they sell. They destroyed your city, they'll destroy you as well. The lecherous and treacherous, a hairman full of leather, each of them bigger than all men put together. Sluggers and muggers, wearing fancy clothes.